Good morning, everybody. I'm Eureka John, and you're at Eureka Street Crypto, broadcasting live from Leander, Texas. It is January 21st, 2022, and it's episode number 395. Yep, getting close to that 400 mark. We'll be there very soon, and I'll probably take a break for a little while, honestly. I got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of work I'm doing with my real job and with some podcast work and stuff like that, and want to spend some time focusing on that stuff. It's cold. Today is very cold out. I'm going to drive into work and it's just that time. It didn't stop me last. This time last year, I hadn't yet committed to my every single day routine. It wasn't until February 6th that I actually buckled down and committed to an everyday routine. So from October 24th, 2020 until February 6th, I was trying to figure out when I'm going to do this and all that stuff. And I would go on like once a week, twice a week, three times a week, whatever, but I wasn't doing it every day. It wasn't until February 6th, 2021 that I was doing it every single day, but that's no excuse. I don't know. Let me just think about it for a second. It'd be cool to get your input about how, if you think I should reformat the show, how you think I should reformat it or whatever. This is my morning brain dump, AKA video blog. And, this is my crypto show where I talk about things that I learn in crypto every single day. It's not financial advice. It's not educational, really, unless you can learn little tidbits here and there. But this is just me just talking into a camera about crypto, about stuff I'm learning. All right, let's go over here to CoinGecko. Things are not looking very good this morning. It's Friday morning. Everything is just dumping. Look at all that red. It looks like blood flows red on the highway. Looks like a driver's ed video. Yep. So everything is down in the dumps right now. I don't know what's causing this. It is what it is, man. I can only imagine. I'm starting to imagine now because I didn't get in. Well, I got into crypto in 2018 and after the big dump, but it's not like I knew any better. I was just getting into crypto and learning about what, Bitcoin was and, all this other stuff and what a wallet was. So I didn't really know any better. And it's just like I kind of just like showed up to a party after the cops had already been there, and there was just maybe, one person passed out on the couch and some beer cans on the floor, So I didn't know any better when I first got into crypto. And so all I've known is upward momentum besides like a couple little mini dips in 2020. And like that one in March of 2020. Whenever COVID first hit, there was a pretty big dip there. And then there was another one, earlier this year, right after the spike in April, there was a pretty big dip, but nothing like what we're seeing now. So for those of you who are class of 2017, as they say, and jumped into crypto at 2017 when everything was real blowing and going, and you're like, yeah, man, this is awesome. And then the next thing you know, everything is just totally taking a dump. I think we're kind of experiencing a similar thing right now. And it is what it is, man. I'm just going to keep at it. I believe in Web3 as a whole. This is just, the progression of things, and everybody gets all excited about new technologies and stuff like that at first. And then, bubbles burst, you have to go back to the basics and the fundamentals. And, imagine a lot of these people and a lot of these little squirrely projects, they're probably really sucking wind right now. Luckily I have like pretty much most of my stuff in this like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Chainlink and like Theta. And I think those are very solid projects. And I don't think that they're going anywhere through all this. So just kind of be patient and hold tight and, keep on keeping on, I'm not too worried about it. Like even Amazon and Google and all those you know, blue chip stocks, the FANG stocks and everything like that, you know, they went through periods like this. And those people that held through those periods are now millionaires, you know, so, yeah, or billionaires. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so Bitcoin's sitting at $38,852.80. Ethereum is $2,862.27. So it's down in the 2800s mark. So that's a first for Ethereum in quite a while. Tether stablecoin, Binance coin up to $428.33. You know, interesting thing that I learned about Binance coin. So Binance coin is a centralized coin for a centralized exchange. And by what I mean by centralized exchange, it's like the on-ramp where you can buy, you know, with your dollars, crypto, and that's a way to get into the crypto world through things like Coinbase and crypto.com and Binance and, you know, stuff like that, Kraken, Gemini. But Binance, they, you know, have a lot of regulatory issues. A lot of countries won't let people use Binance, like the United States, for instance. So the United States has to use like a special version of Binance called Binance.us. And even in Texas, where I am, I can't use Binance at all. I mean, I guess I could use a VPN and stuff, but then I would still have to go through KYC, which stands for Know Your Customer, and you know, do my whole driver's license, hold it up, take a photo, do the whole verification process. And then once they see that, which I've done before, they denied it, saying, oh, you're in a state that doesn't allow, you know, Binance. So even with a VPN, I'm not able to go from like, you know, fiat dollar currency to crypto using Binance. So Binance is really kind of irrelevant to me. Yes, I do sometimes use PancakeSwap and Binance Smart Chain for some things using a VPN and stuff like that. But yeah, I can't sit there and hold a Binance account. So that being said, anyway, my point is I was listening to this interview with Vitalik Buterin, who's the founder of Ethereum, and he recently went down to Argentina, and you know, it said, you know, what is the number one cryptocurrency that everybody's using down there? And you would think it'd be like Bitcoin or Ethereum or something like that. No, it's not. It's actually Binance. You know, because if you know anything about Argentina, you know the Argentinian, peso, is in the tank. It's being highly inflated. They're going the way of Venezuela with their currency and stuff like that. It's, you know, looking at cryptocurrency from other countries through the lens of other countries' economies really gives you a wake-up call to the importance of all this stuff. And the dollar is slowly going there. But they, you know, they've been using cryptocurrencies for quite a while. A lot of Latin American countries whose peso is just getting inflated, you know, to hell. So they're no stranger to this stuff, but they're not really using Bitcoin. Some are using Dash, you know, but the most popular cryptocurrency being used is Binance coin. And you know, they're not really using the dollar either, the United States dollar, because it's too valuable over there. You know, if somebody were to keep dollars in their mattress, they'd probably be broken in and robbed. So yeah, there's that issue. So they use Binance coin, and you ask, why wouldn't they worry about decentralization and all this other stuff? You know, well, in comparison to their Argentine peso, it's Binance coin is a good deal. You know, it's fairly stable. They can transfer in and out of it pretty easily. They say, but it's not decentralized. Well, they don't really care about all that much. I mean, I guess they have a lot of faith in CZ, who's the CEO of Binance, you know, and his databases, because that's pretty much all it is. It's just company databases that's holding a record of an account, you know, for that stuff. But Binance is very convenient for a lot of countries. And then the currency that they're using is total dog trash. So yeah, I just found it interesting that Binance was like the number one cryptocurrency being used in Argentina. So anyway, so let's move on down. USDC is a stablecoin, dollar, Cardano, $1.23, Solana, $123.02, XRP, 69 cents, Terra, $76.57, Polkadot, $22.40, the Doge, 15 cents, down 11%. Avalanche, let's see where that's $75.90. You know, all this stuff right now is a really good buy if you're going to be buying crypto. I'm not telling you what to do or anything financial advice, because a lot of times whenever you think that the floor is in, you know, it just keeps on dipping. Binance USD, that's the stable coin for Binance, and that's $1.99. Shiba Inu, 0.0000257, down 13%. Polygon, down 17.3%. So yeah, man, a lot of major dippage this morning. So, you know, I hope you like Copenhagen and Skull, man, because you're dipping. anyway. Bad joke. So speaking of Binance and it being centralized, there's, you know, all the validators in such a system would be owned by Binance, and validators are what keeps cryptocurrency alive, and validators, miners, nodes, things like that. Here's a quick little thread on by Swan Bitcoin. I like Swan Bitcoin. I like Guy Swan. I listened to his Bitcoin Audible podcast on Spotify, and he just basically just reads articles. So, you know, it's a good way for me to drive to work and feel like I'm reading articles without actually reading articles. But he picks out and he curates some really good ones. But anyway, he has a thread here. How does Bitcoin technically work? And his podcast is called Bitcoin Audible, for those of you who don't know. All right. So here's how does Bitcoin work? Bitcoin represents a novel form of accounting in which everyone stores a copy of an identical ledger. So that's all blockchain and cryptocurrency is just a bunch of different computers connected together, speaking to each other with an identical copy of a ledger. Like a bank ledger, you know, like you log into your bank account and you can see all your transactions. And then, you know, yeah. And imagine if there were a bunch of different copies of that all around, verifying each other to make sure that they're all up to date. So if you go buy some Skittles at a gas station, that the bank's copy gets updated. And if it were a distributed ledger, then every computer that held a copy of your account would also get updated with that Skittles transaction. So here we are. A bank stores a ledger that everyone can access, but only by going through the bank. So this is Binance. It's not Binance, because Binance has their blockchain. So they have a bunch of different computers, but all those computers are owned by Binance. But this is your bank. The bank stores a ledger that everyone can access, but only by going through the bank. So yeah, whenever you're buying those Skittles with your Visa credit card, your bank account gets updated. And then, yeah, so you always have to log into your bank computer. Here, and then a distributed ledger, everyone has a copy of the ledger that they can access independently. I love how it's a pentagram. Satan, I number the beast. Number two, Bitcoin protocol uses cryptography, not cartography. That's the maps. Cryptography to maintain privacy. In many places, the protocol uses hash functions, which can turn arbitrary data into the numbers within a set range. The Bitcoin protocol uses a special hash function called SHA-256. With SHA-256, it's basically a hash. And this number here, this random number, represents hello world, right? So if you change one small thing, like maybe add an exclamation point or even like capitalize the W in world, this number completely changes to something completely randomized and completely different. So that is basically what a hash function is. So it's really impossible to reverse decode a hash function. And that's SHA-256. Okay, so the Bitcoin blockchain is built by a series of linked blocks dependent on the previous block. On average, every 10 minutes, a new block is formed. And then for each new block, miners hash together new transactions, the hash from the previous block, and a random number to find a new block. Okay, so that's what each of those miner nodes do in proof of stake. They're called validator nodes, but they kind of work on the same. I mean, they're proof of work and proof of stake, but they work on the same distributed ledger type of system in which they have a bunch of different computers all cross checking each other to make sure that everybody has the same version, right, of the database, I guess, you know, for lack of better words. Sometimes two miners and validators even find a block at the same time or within a few seconds. In that case, the blockchain is temporarily split until another block is found, and that it's called an uncle. And then once a new block is found, it is shared across the network, and the old uncle block or the orphan blockchain is abandoned, and all the computers, aka nodes, switch onto the new longer chain. All right, so that's how it always has the same copy, no matter what, even if something is done at the same time. So anyway, these orphan blocks or orphan chains are quite different from hard forks, which are chains of the Bitcoin blockchain that have abandoned the original rule and instituted a new backward incompatible rules. History is littered with these failed projects. Bitcoin Gold, Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, BSV, that's Craig Wright's version. Bitcoin Cash, that's funny, they have that in there because Bitcoin Cash is still an ongoing blockchain. All these are, you know, and you have their believers in each one of these, which, I don't know why. But I mean, Bitcoin Cash, I guess, they strive to be more of a real fast, quick transaction type of blockchain. Anyway, Bitcoin is open source, so anybody can go in and use the code and kind of tweak it a little bit and create like a new version of it. So that creates a fork. And Ethereum, same thing. You know, Ethereum has its code, it's open source, and people go in and they create forks of it. And yeah, actually, Ethereum itself is a fork of itself. And the old fork, the old Ethereum, is called Ethereum Classic. And then they had what was called the DAO hack, when money was just being drained out of Ethereum, and they were kind of back against the wall, and they said, you know what, we know that the ideal of blockchains is supposed to be decentralization, and you can't screw with it, and no matter what happens, code is law. But there were people losing millions and millions of dollars, so they decided to fork it, and they have been picked on by Bitcoin maxis and, you know, other critics of blockchain ever since then for doing that. It was in the very infancy, early days of Ethereum. Bitcoin has also had a similar type of code breach as well back in its early days. So neither blockchains are immune to some human circumstances that have happened to it. But anyway, back to mining. Finding a block is really hard. In order to find a new block and thus mine Bitcoin, miners need to produce a hash value that is below a current threshold. So the threshold is determined by the mining difficulty. So the higher the difficulty, the smaller the threshold, and the harder it is to mine Bitcoin. So the more people you have online and mining, the harder it gets to find blocks. That's where the difficulty comes from. So, you can think of hashing as a rolling a die that produces numbers from zero to the number of atoms in the universe based on the input data, which consists of transactions. Only hashes below the target win the lottery, and you have to show what data you produce, you use to produce the hash. And that's basically what these mining computers are doing, is they're rolling a bunch of random numbers, trying to get on point to the target number. And the first one to do that, you know, wins. And it takes a lot of computing power to continually roll that as fast and as many times as possible until you get on that target number. And then the computer that finds it wins. And so that's why people are using all this energy and buying these big computers to be able to do this as fast as possible, so they can be the computer to find the hash, because they'll get that Bitcoin reward. So every 2 weeks, the Bitcoin difficulty automatically adjusts if blocks are found faster than the 10-minute target. The difficulty adjusts so blocks become harder to find. If it takes longer than 10 minutes to find valid blocks, the difficulty drops. Okay. and a lot of, for instance, like whenever the Bitcoin miners all China shut down Bitcoin mining and they made it illegal. A huge swath of Bitcoin mining got shut down. And so the difficulty was really high just before that, but it dropped because there were a lot less miners and a lot less miners looking for that hash. So yeah. Anyway, so there's a chart of the time between blocks in 2018 because blocks were more than 10 minutes apart in November. And we know that the hash rate decreased during that month. But as you can see from this chart, despite the drop in hash rate in late 2018, Bitcoin's hash rate and difficulty has been increasing significantly. And then this chart is now outdated. It is far higher in 2022. So now on to actually Bitcoin sending transactions. Your Bitcoin is actually recorded in the Bitcoin ledger as unspent transaction outputs. It's UTXO. So think of UTXO as cash. Like you, if you want to spend $17, you give the clerk a 20 and the 20 gives you back $3. So it's like this whole bill and change mechanism. Unlike Ethereum, that's more just like a bank account ledger in which, you know, you spend $17 and you swipe your card and $17 gets pulled out of your account. So that's one big difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum is the concept of how they maintain their accounts. Bitcoin is more just like cash, you know, called UTXO, unspent transaction outputs, and that where Ethereum is an actual account. So when you wish to send Bitcoin, you must send an entire UTXO or multiple UTXOs, and you can receive a change output back. Right. So in order to spend a UTXO from a public address, you must have access to the private keys of that public address that holds a UTXO. While everyone can send Bitcoin to a public address, only owners of the private keys associated with that address can send Bitcoin from that address. So that's just the basic rundown on Bitcoin. There's a website here called glassnode.com. If you are into charts and graphs and things like that, you can go to Glassnode. You can sign up for, you know, the premium membership and, you know, get to see all the pretty little, you know, graphs and charts and all that stuff. And, you know, it keeps track of all the Bitcoin nodes, of all the wallets that hold Bitcoin, all these metrics, you know. Let me go to a list of charts here so you can kind of get a general idea. This is Glassnode, and there's, you know, some other versions and, you know, different ones that allow you to see a bunch of statistics. I think CryptoQuant is another one. Glassnode Studio. I don't really poke in here that much, but occasionally I'll come in here and take a look. Let's see here. Charts, dashboards, workbench, trading view. You know, a lot of people feel like that they can predict what's going to happen by looking to see if there's any inactive wallets that suddenly have a lot of activity. You know, and stuff like that to kind of give people some key indicators of some stuff that might be happening. So here's a number of Bitcoin addresses since 2010. And so look at that. And then there's the big drop right around here. July 10th, looks like it dropped pretty heavy. June 26th. Of Bitcoin addresses, and then it's slowly been increasing here since then. So those are the number of Bitcoin addresses, derivatives, distribution entities, exchanges, fees, institutions, lifespan on the Lightning Network. You can take a look at that. Let's look at miners here and see what we have here. Miner activities, miners to exchanges. Okay, or miner outflow volume. It's a interesting statistic to look and see if miners are selling or if they're hoarding, you know, their Bitcoin. Those are indicators of different types of market activity. But here you have to have a professional plan to view this metric and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, there's varying degrees and things that you have access to with Glassnode. I obviously don't have a professional version because I don't really sit around and stare at graphs. But if you do, this is a great tool to have here. Here's the fees, Bitcoin total fees. And look in 2018, the fees totally spiked. And then back down here at 2022, Bitcoin fees are really low. All right. So anyway, it's a good idea to kind of keep track of where all this stuff is. Validator nodes on any new blockchain like Avalanche, Cardano, Ethereum, Harmony blockchain, Solana. it's a good idea to see how many validators each blockchain has, so you can kind of see how decentralized a blockchain is, because that's important, and that's important for the security of the blockchain and the integrity of the blockchain. So you don't just have some company, you know, running everything and ruling everything, and then if some kind of, you know, something spooks a company, maybe some kind of government regulation or something, the entire blockchain shuts down, you know, or yeah. So I don't know. But here is the Bitcoin node distribution right here. This is at bitnodes.io, and it kind of gives you a visual look at how many different nodes there are. So it looks like there's pretty widely dispersed on a lot of different countries. So country rank not applicable. So I guess these are nodes in various different countries. Not really exactly sure what NA means, but United States has a large swath of nodes. Number two, Germany. There's a lot of nodes, Bitcoin nodes in Germany, France and the Netherlands and Canada, down at 300, Switzerland. So there's a pretty good wide disbursement of nodes all throughout the world for Bitcoin network. And that's one of that's why Bitcoin's still around and still relevant, because it is the oldest and most widely distributed network of blockchain nodes that is out there, period. It's the most secure blockchain, period. So when people are buying Bitcoin and when people are doing stuff with Bitcoin, they are buying truth. That's basically what they're buying. So, you know, if you go over here to something like, say, for instance, let's go to Harmony. Let's take a look at what Harmony has to do. You know, Harmony, I think, is proof of stake, but either way, it doesn't matter. We can still look at their validator nodes and see how centralized or decentralized they are. So Bitcoin, you know, they have 7,500, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yeah, you know, like they got a lot of nodes. Oh, 14,742 nodes, right? For Bitcoin. Yeah. That's a lot of nodes. And that's not even included. And I look at China, it still seemed it was pretty blank there. So let's see, here is the Harmony nodes. Total network stake elected all nodes, 278 validator nodes for Harmony. That's a lot different than 14,000 nodes for Bitcoin. So if you go to the blockchain explorer for each one of these blockchains, you know, whichever one you're interested in looking at, then you just find validators, you know, or you know, nodes or something like that. So you can do validator node Harmony. You can do that type of search, you know, blockchain explorer validators Harmony, you know, or whatever blockchain that you're trying to look at. And if you scroll down here, you can see, you know, the name of the node. A lot of times some of these blockchains will just be riddled with Harmony owned or blockchain company owned nodes. You know, for instance, Zcash is owned by the Electronic Coin Commission. So if you were to go look at their nodes, you would want to pay attention to how many of those nodes are owned by Electronic Coin Commission, ECC, or Electronic Coin Company. Because that means that it's pretty centralized. If there's like 1,000 different nodes, but 900 of them are owned by the, you know, ECC, Electronic Coin Company, then you know that, you know, it's pretty centralized, you know. So same thing with Harmony and stuff like that, with Avalanche. You know, there's generally one company that's mainly in charge of keeping things up to date, like the Ethereum Foundation as well for Ethereum. But here's the nodes, and here's the uptime, 99.4%, you know, and some of these, Harmony seems to have a pretty good track record as far as I can see here about uptime. It's changed. I looked at this several months ago, and most of the nodes back then were Harmony nodes. Looks like a lot of that has changed. So interesting. Okay, cool. So, but there's 278 nodes. It's a far cry from Bitcoin's 14,000 nodes. Let's go over here to Solana and their blockchain explorer, SolanaBeach.io. and /validators. Let's take a look and see what Solana has, what that looks like. So this is always good stuff to take a look at whenever you're exploring a blockchain and kind of trying to figure it out. How legit is it? You know, how decentralized is it? How secure is it? Solana has been criticized of having massive failures, you know, and downtime for the entire blockchain and stuff like that. And it's been criticized for the nodes being really difficult and expensive to operate. And therefore, you have to be like a large company to do it and stuff like that. And, you know, as a result, it's not as secure. It's not as decentralized. Or no, it's pretty secure if the companies, you know, if Solana, if the node companies are secure, but if there's not a whole lot of them, it's not very decentralized. So if anything happens to those companies running those nodes, then something bad can happen. You know, like there being downtime and you losing all your money or whatever. It's sitting here making me wait. All right, I'll wait. Come on. But anyway, there's 1,405 validators on Solana. You know, and here they have staking APY nominal at 6.48%, which is not bad. I can't seem to get this page to pull up. Everything's slugging. Probably because I'm doing, you know, broadcasting. But you kind of get the point of what I'm doing here. I'm looking at all these different validator nodes. I'm seeing, you know, who these people are that are being these validators. Are they independent or are they basically affiliated with each respective blockchain and controlled by that? For instance, like, you know, one blockchain may be owned by, maybe run and maintained by one specific company, and they own all those nodes. So it doesn't matter that there's like 1,000 nodes if they're all run by the same company, you know? So imagine if that warehouse with all housing all those nodes, you know, the power goes out, you know, or whatever, you know, something happens to it, then there goes all those nodes, and the decentralization is just like ruined, and it's a moot topic. Anyway, I can't get these pages to load up. The internet is acting really slow, so I'm just gonna give up on this. I'm at 33 minutes anyway, and I need, here's Arc blockchain. I'm just gonna give up on this and go to work. I have probably gonna have a long commute to work today. The roads may be icy. I don't know. I'm going to try to leave early just in case. But here's the Arc blockchain. Now, the thing about Arc blockchain is they have what's called delegates. So you have to be voted in as a node. And there's only 51 active validators at a time. Well, they have 1,134 validators on standby waiting to be voted in at any time and stuff like that. And then there's ones that resign. So there's like a rotation of nodes. There's all these little subtle nuances in which different ways in which blockchains operate. Arc uses delegated validators. They have to be, you know, voted into place. So there's only 51 active nodes at a time. And Theta Network does something similar to this. They have various nodes. They have their Guardian nodes and their Edge nodes down below. But at the very top, they have their Enterprise nodes, which there's only a handful of them. And they are very, very large corporations like Google and Sony and Samsung and stuff like that. And that can receive a lot of criticism. Hedera Hashgraph has the same. They have only 32 of their nodes, you know, at the top. And those are all large corporations that they claim are representing different sectors of society and technology. We get you. But so there's a lot of different ways in which these blockchains are organizing themselves, and a lot of different nodes and a lot of node counts of how many there are, and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a million ways you can do it. So it's good to sit here and study and look at all these different blockchains and see how they've all set it up, because there's a lot of subtle nuances, and it will determine how decentralized or not these blockchains really are. So a lot of, for instance, Solana claims to be really fast, but there's really not that many nodes. Bitcoin has 14,000 nodes, but it's slow, but it's super decentralized, So yeah, these are some things to consider. Whenever blockchains are talking about speed, yeah, they might have a lot of speed, but are they really that decentralized? And if they're not decentralized, how's their security, there's just a lot of things to consider. Here's Avalanche node distribution right here. All this stuff's taking a long time to load, so sorry about that. I just wanted to take a minute, take an episode, and just look at, just some of the fundamentals of the structure of a lot of these blockchains and some things you need to consider, whenever, versus, advertising what people these supporters and fans of these blockchains, people get real tribal in crypto, and they love their project and their blockchain and stuff like that. And they will push it and talk about it like it's the best things in sliced bread. But if you really want to get into the nitty gritty and see how all the stuff and see if it under the hood, if it's really as good as they say it is, go to their blockchain explorers for each respective blockchain. And all you have to do is like do a search in a search engine and do, like, for instance, Avalanche blockchain explorer validators. And that's it. And you'll find it. Yeah, for instance, Avalanche has 1,237 validators. Yeah, and if you look at the staking distribution, you can see, what the distribution of the stake is and stuff like that. For instance, here's a node. This has been a node for 21 days. This other one, a node for a month. This one's been a node for a year. So it's good to see how long these nodes have been around and stuff like that. You obviously want ones that have been around for quite a while. All right. Well, I got to go. I got to get on down to work, but I will talk to you guys later. And who knows what we'll be talking about tomorrow. All right. Bye, y'all.
Thank you for making it to the end of this program. If you actually like this content, give a thumbs up. And if you want to hear more, just hit the subscribe button. I'm available on YouTube, Odyssey, and BitChute, and on all the major podcasting platforms in audio version. Spotify specifically, if you would like to follow and leave a review, that would help a lot. I am also available on Twitter at EurekaJohn1. That's EUREKA John, JOHN, and the number 1. My DMs are always open. Feel free to shoot me a message. If you would like to donate some stablecoin or Ethereum, please feel free to send it to eurekajohn.crypto or eurekajohn.eth. This will help with the gas costs for all these protocols that I mess around with. Because that gas adds up, and I ain't rich. Yet. Thanks again.